What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
What's up, Kings fans, and welcome to the Hockey Royalty Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. I'm Scott Kinville, and we got some stuff we've got to unwrap today. A few things to talk about. Before we do, we want to let you know that you can find us all over social media. We're on Twitter at royalty underscore pod, at hockey underscore royalty. Let's see, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube. We're all over the place, guys. We're everywhere. That's what those old American Express commercials. I don't know if you guys remember those or not, or if I'm just too old. It's everywhere you want to be. No, it was Visa. I'm sorry. See, I am getting old. Anyways, before we start talking about all this, I'm going to bring in my bandmates. First of all, the guy who leads us into hockey battle every time, every day, everywhere. He's the one. He's the only. He's Mr. Ryan Sykes. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Scott. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Just trying to recover from hockey this week.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah.
It's a long process. Oh, boy. And our other bandmate, of course, he is the emperor of all things analytics around here at HockeyRoyalty.com. He is the count, of course. He is the prince of PDO. If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know where I'm going with this. Drum roll, please. The one, the only, Mr. Russell Morgan. What's going on, Russ?
What's going on, Scotty? What's going on, Ryan? Yeah, it's been an emotional roller coaster the last couple games for the Kings.
Yeah. I would say that's a very good understatement. That's for sure. So, guys, let's get right into this. This week's been kind of rough. We've been riding high for a while here. The Kings have looked outstanding. And then this week happened. The other night they returned home to the Crypto.com arena. And, well, not really returned home. They were only in Anaheim, and then they played it home on Saturday. Anyways, Boston Bruins came to town. A visit from the Eastern Conference, which – normally, the Kings are very, very good against. It didn't go that way Monday night, unfortunately. It looked more like a football score. So let's break this down, guys. Ryan, what'd you see?
Well, unfortunately, the Bruins were a lot more physical. They were heavy on the forecheck. They lived up to the hype of being one of the upper echelon teams in the National Hockey League. You know, I tweeted out with Russ's help in advance, but the Kings were like 11 and 13 and 3 against playoff teams that were occupying a playoff spot coming into that game. So it was a good test. You know, I think Zach Dooley tweeted out over the weekend, I think on Sunday, the Kings were like 15-0-2 against teams under 500. So taking care of business, but obviously you got to, we talked about it in the last one. I'm not going to do my Ric Flair again, but you got to be the man. You got to beat the man, right?
You just need a Ric Flair win now. That's all you need.
I couldn't help myself.
How about you, Russ?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't. Once you saw that first goal go in through Jonathan Quick, seven hole, it was just like, oh, no, here we go. Because You were kind of expecting one of these games to happen, especially with the way the team has been playing. You're just kind of like, okay, when is the letdown going to happen? Because they're not going to ride this high all the way to the playoffs. It's going to end sooner or later. And sure enough, like, it happened with a 7-0 loss. I mean, probably would have liked it to be a little bit less than that. But yeah, it was just a game that it was weird because the first period, even though they went into the second down 2-0, I thought they played okay. I mean, besides that quick goal and the giveaway by Anderson, it was an evenly played period, I think. But then the team just kind of was like, okay, we're just going to throw this one away and just move on to the next thing. Maybe they were thinking about the road trip coming up, but who knows? Yeah, it was just, I don't know. I don't want to say it was a disappointing game because we've seen this team have losses like this the last couple months. I mean, you look back at the Vegas loss when they came back after the Christmas break. You look back at I think it was the Edmonton loss after the COVID break. So these losses, it wasn't really that surprising, but you were kind of hoping that they'd be able to bounce back and move on to the Dallas game, but we know how that ended too.
Well, yeah, it was also their third game in four nights.
Yeah, yeah. Scott, and the turning point for me and the Boston game was when they couldn't convert on the 5-on-3 power play. They had a minute 22, and I think they got one shot off. Like Kempe missed the net.
Yeah. And that's something that they've talked about on power plays. It's like I remember McClellan's talked about this, that they've had power play opportunities where guys who shoot the pucks aren't shooting. And I noticed that multiple times when Kempe had the puck at the circle and just started to try to pass it off. And I'm thinking man, just throw it on. You have guys parked in front. You have, I believe Iafallo was parked in front. Just throw it on the pad and just see what happens. Create some havoc in front. And I think that's kind of been the MO of the Kings power play, where there aren't really a lot of opportunities. It seems like down low, it looks like for more of their opportunities are coming up high. And they've been trying to rely more on those long shots from the blue line or from the circle to go in to convert on the power play, but they're not really looking for those dirty goals. And I was kind of hoping to see more of that on the 5-on-3 power play, but it never really came to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Is it time to switch things up on the power play?
Yes. I mean, we'll get into his own segment here, but I think you got to take Dustin Brown off the power play.
Mm-hmm.
And Russ, you kind of touched on it, but the point I wanted to hit on with Dustin Brown as a whole, I kind of floated out the question last night during the game, but should he be removed from the lineup as a healthy scratch in favor of some of these other players, or is his presence just being in the lineup good for the younger players or whatnot? But before we hopped on here, I'm looking at Dustin Brown's stats. He's shooting at just a 4.7% clip, which is the lowest since his rookie year. So I don't know if it's just as simple as getting more pucks on net for Dustin, but it can't be on the power play right now. I mean, I'll just say this, guys. When the Kings score on the power play, I'm actually pleasantly surprised. I know Kalia did last night. I kind of view it more as of a two-minute time where the Kings have the puck.
Yeah, all right. And when they score, it's like when you were a kid, your parents said, hey, we're going to go out for ice cream. Oh, boy. But, yeah, that's valid. I mean, I think it's going to be easier to take Brownie out of the lineup if they start to slump a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the deal, right? They were playing so well. They won, 9 of their last 12 games prior to the Boston game. And it's almost one of those you don't want to fix what isn't broken, even though you can see a break coming, right?
Yeah.
But, it's hard decisions, man. I wouldn't want to be in that spot, mm-hmm. but because Dustin Brown is a legend in this franchise, there's just no getting around that.
And especially with 27 games left of the regular season, I mean, you kind of have to have things locked in now and not be experimenting with stuff.
No, not at all. But you know what? I also think that maybe a little bit of a rest would do him some good.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not a permanent benching, but hey, take Friday off against Columbus and come back Sunday for Buffalo.
See what happens. There's no harm in doing that, really.
Well, I mean, I think that's a great point because, I mean, if the Kings do end up making the playoffs, I mean, what better player would you want in the lineup than Dustin Brown?
Exactly.
A player that has been there before who plays that type of playoff type game. So when I talk about healthy scratching, or I think it's a great idea right now, I mean, this long slog of the regular season, this full 82 game season that the Kings haven't played in the last 2 years. I mean, maybe it's starting to get to him. Maybe he's getting these legs. I mean, bring in some young talent and just see what they can bring. Bring some excitement to the end of the regular season. Just try to tread water and try to get a playoff spot. But when you get to that final, last couple of games, put Dustin Brown back in, see what he's able to bring with fresh legs and then getting into the playoffs. But right now, the production's not there. And that shooting percentage, I think it's more so the test of he's just taking the easy way out, it feels like. I've seen a lot of unforced icings from him off his stick. The power play, it's just there's not really a lot of creativity coming from him. It's just I think a healthy scratch for a game or two would do good for him for the longer stretch of the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost like addition by subtraction.
And I mean, he was always a very physical player throughout his career. He had, 311 in the 2007-08 season. Last year, he had 85 hits in 49 games. He has 75 right now through 52 games. I mean, so even when he wasn't scoring, he was, lighting up the opposition or whatever to force a turnover, and he's not even doing that right now.
Yeah. But here's a question, and since we're talking about it, if you do healthy scratch Dustin Brown for a game or two or whatever it is, who slides into the byfield line? Who do you think would be the better fit, I should say?
Well, I mentioned it last night. I think if you're going to move Dustin Brown, that's the thing, is I don't know if they would ever actually move Dustin Brown out of the lineup because of what he's done for the franchise. So maybe they slide him down. Maybe you switch him with Kaliev, and you have Kaliev play with Byfield on the third line. And then with Jod, with the team, have him take over Grundstrom's spot. I mean, right now it seems like Athanasiou is just trade bait right now.
It really does.
If you're not playing a guy who's on a 1-year deal, who's going to be UFA at the end of the year, I mean, you have to see what his market's going to be come the deadline.
Absolutely.
It makes sense.
Well, that's what we've been talking about all along, guys. The forwards, musical chairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of the
music stopping.
What was the passengers phrase that you used, Russ, earlier in the season?
Exactly.
I mean, another kind of interesting idea that I thought about and I saw floating around last night was, what about putting Kaliev up on the top line and moving Iafallo down to the third line, and then that would be like Grundstrom, Byfield, and Iafallo on that third line. Obviously, you need to figure out who replaces Kaliev there on the fourth line, but I think there could be something there.
Could be, and this is the ideal time to do it now that you're going into Columbus and Buffalo, where two teams that are out of the playoffs right now. Anyways, Columbus has still got a mathematical shot anyhow. But, here's the thing, right? So the Boston game happened. You flush it. You forget about it. You head out to the road. You're in Dallas last night, Wednesday night. And, boy, I tell you, they started good. They were up 3-1 in the second period, and then the wheels fell off. So, yeah. Ross, what happened there?
Yeah, the first period, like you said, it was a good start. The first couple minutes, they got the no goal. And I guess throughout the whole first period, I thought the team looked pretty good. But then they got to the second period, and they got the lead with the Kaliev markers. But besides those, it was kind of like a lackluster period for the second. And then going into, I mean, obviously giving up, what was it, four goals in that period or three goals in that period. It was just, that speaks for itself, I guess. But throughout that, after the first period, throughout the game, they didn't look good, and it was kind of like back to the Boston game. And even Trent Yanni had mentioned that he's seen a little bit of this at the end of the Islanders game as well. So you're just kind of hoping to see maybe this team can get their 5-on-5 legs back underneath them, because it's not really this type of Kings. It's not really the Kings to be playing a lackluster 5-on-5 game right now.
No, it's not really. And I mean, that fourth goal that Dallas scored was just a dagger. That hurt.
Yeah.
Oh man, but you really can't blame Cal Peterson for last night either. I mean, he was pretty much under siege from the second period on. At least I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that, because I saw a lot of people coming at Cal. I mean, he could have made a couple saves, but I mean, I was looking at his goal saved above expected, and it was actually, for to give up four goals, it was only a minus 0.03. Yeah, so he was still pretty,
zero.
Yeah, pretty much zero. Yeah. So even with all the four goals against and still having even goal saved above expected, that's not really a bad performance there. Without him, it would have been even more. It could have been 7-3, 6-3, who knows?
Yeah.
The couple of things that stood out to me, guys, in the second period were just the number of penalties that the Kings took. You know, I think I messaged you guys. They're just playing with fire right now. They're asking to get scored on. We saw how that turned out. The other thing that my major takeaway was Arthur Kaliev's committing to a 200-foot game. You saw, I forget who was just about to wind up for the shot, and he poke-checked it away, carried it up ice, and kind of skated towards the slot and through traffic and just fired it right past Ottinger. And that really opened my eyes to Kaliev's development. You know, immediately the words of his, like, scouting report came into my head of, like, not a great skater, not good defensively. He's a pure shooter. And I was just like, guys, he's coming along just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And you want to talk about a player that's actually deserved more playing time and time, you know, a chance to move up in the lineup. Number 34 is your guy.
He's got 11 goals on the fourth line.
Yeah, I know right?
Yeah, and I think that's probably helped his defensive game. I mean, you play like a player like Blake Lizotte, who's always going to be in on the forecheck, who brings that tenacity along with Lemieux. Kaliev's almost been kind of forced into like a more defense type game, but he's looked great defensively all season. I think his defensive metrics in terms of analytics are actually really good, and if not one of the best on the team. So when I want to say, when I say I want to see Kaliev playing with like a Byfield or playing on the top line, it's hard because he's playing really well with Lizotte and Lemieux. And I mean, like you mentioned, Scott, with when the team was playing good, it's hard to fix something that isn't broken. So now that we're starting to see a slide with the Kings and that the 5-on-5 starting to decline a little bit, maybe there is a chance to change things up a bit and see what maybe you can bring some more production out of Kaliev.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I just want to touch on a couple of takeaways I saw online last night after the game. One said that Byfield should be down in the AHL. And I can't say as I agree with that.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, here's the thing. He's young. He's got to have time in LA to figure it out. And, you know, I think it was Dennis Bernstein responded to it. And he said, you know, right now he's in the ideal spot. You know, he's basically protected in the lineup by Kopitar and Denault. So, you know, to me, sending Byfield down to the AHL is completely out of the question.
If they were going to send him down, it would have been before his 10th game this season.
Right.
Not start the clock on his ELC.
100%.
When he played in his 10th game, I was like, all right, he's staying up here the rest of the year.
And this is exactly where he needs to be. He's got to develop at NHL speed because he's certainly got the talent and the tools to do it. Another thing that was brought up, and I have to say I 100% agree with this. We were just talking about Arthur Kaliev shooting off his off wing.
Yes,
that's a phenomenal observation and so true. If you really think about it, take a look at a guy like Ovechkin does it all the time, hammers the puck off from his off wing. You know, so why not try to do that with Arthur Kaliev?
That's kind of what I was thinking. If he goes up top in place of Iafallo, for first line left winger, you know, that would give him that opportunity.
Isn't it weird that we've talked about this team really isn't going to be a contender unless Iafallo is not playing on the first line, and we're starting to see that a little bit because yeah, he's playing really good defensively. He's doing all the right things. I mean, Kopitar loves playing with him, but he's just not – I mean, it's hard because he's not really producing offensively right now. I mean, I think his last goal was January 30th, I believe, and then he's had one goal in his last 15 or so games. But it's just hard because if the Kings ever got like a legit – let's say the Kings did end up getting Philip Forsberg somehow. Man, if you pair him with Kempe and Kopitar – and you're able to slide Iafallo down to the third line, man, that's just a formidable lineup. And the Kings, it's just hard because you want to see Iafallo doing well, and he's gotten that $4 million deal for a couple years, but there's just not a lot of offense from him, and he's playing like a really good, solid defensive game, but you want to see more production off the first line.
Yeah, and just real quick, I mean, I misspoke earlier. I meant first line right winger. Kelly is a left shot. Mm-hmm. My apologies, guys.
Ah, that's okay. We'll let it slide this time.
As soon as I said it, I was like, God, that does not sound right.
But yeah, no, you're right, Russ. I mean, what do you do? I mean, yeah, Forsberg would be awesome. I don't think it happens at the trade deadline, to be honest with you. I was seeing reports that Nashville is actually going to put a press on to re-sign him. We'll see how that goes. But I don't know. There's not only do you have the forward lines to think about, you also have the defensive pairings to think about, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, you know, the turnover the other night from Mike Anderson. Yeah, that's a young player, but I mean, somebody who's really actually starting to surprise, believe it or not, is Alimata.
Yeah,
you know, for as much as maligned as he's been as his time as a King. Suddenly, he's actually a very valuable part of that defensive core. So the question now becomes, we're going to have Edler coming back pretty soon. Guys are probably towards the end of the season maybe looking to push out of Ontario. What do you do with Mata?
Well, kind of looked at this couple scenarios. Can either have him as your seventh defenseman. I mean, he's got, 78? Career playoff games, 2 Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh. He was actually very good with the Blackhawks in the playoff bubble. I think he had 6 points in 9 games. There are 3 goals, 3 assists with paired with Connor Murphy, I believe. That type of presence, just like what we're talking about with Dustin Brown here, guys, I mean, can be very valuable for a defensive core, you know, outside of Doughty that doesn't really have a lot of playoff experience. The other option I considered, you know, if something falls into your lap and you can get something for him at the deadline, I would consider moving him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because his value is not going to be any higher than it is right now.
Yeah. I think Zach Dooley tweeted out he had like a +9 in the month of February, and it was highlighted by that +4 game on, was it Saturday?
Yep. Yeah.
Islanders.
Yeah, I mean, when for Olimata, it's tough for me because, yeah, he's been playing well. I'm just kind of waiting for that Olimata moment to happen,
bottom to fall out.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, yeah, let's ride this wave as long as we can. I mean, Olimata, he's been there before, 2 cups champion. He was, like you said, Ryan, he played really well for Chicago in the bubble before he came to the Kings, but. Once Alex Edler comes back, or let's say a Jacob Chychrun trade happens, I mean, I would just expect him to be a seventh defenseman, and a really valuable seventh defenseman. If you can have a player like that coming off the bench, if whenever needed, that's a good asset to have. But I don't agree with takes to say play him over Toby Bjornfoot when Alex Edler comes back, or bench Bjornfoot, because I think Kings fans are starting to get blinders on, and I've been. This happened to me too. I mean, the team's been playing really well. Playoffs are start talking. Everyone's talking about playoffs. We want to see the team winning. But I think the real purpose of this season was development. And when people start thinking about what Byfield's doing right now, you don't want to send him down to the AHL, especially after he's been playing more than 10 games to kick that ELC in, because he's getting development right now. I mean, who cares about production? He's just getting NHL games under his belt.
Just and have him play the Islanders every single game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And have Cali play the Stars every game. That'd be
I thought about that this morning, too.
But, yeah, I think that's kind of what Kings fans have forgotten about, is that these games that these young players are getting, like Bjornfoot or like Anderson and Byfield, these are great for their development. I mean, Byfield's still a rookie. Bjornfoot's still 20 years old. Yeah. Imagine these players like this get playoff games under their belt before they turn 20 years old. That's going to be great for the future of their career.
And I'll even say, you know, an outside chance that they don't make the playoffs, just them being in a playoff race is going to force them to elevate their game. It's kind of a sink or swim for them, right?
100%. I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head right there. These games right now, for them to be playing these physical type games against teams like Boston, against teams like Dallas who are fighting for a playoff spot. I mean, you look at the players that they're going up against lately. I mean, this can be huge for the next couple of years, and it's only going to help the Kings and their growth really quickly. So you can see a lot more, a lot better play coming from them in the end of the season or even the next few seasons too.
Mm-hmm.
No, I totally agree. And I just wanted to just touch on Olaimata again real quick. You know, he's going to be more valuable than people think, in my opinion anyway, because a guy like Olaimata, who, like you mentioned, Russ, has two Stanley Cup championships. He's got 78 games of playoffs experience. Teams that are up against the cap but are this close to the cup that just need that one or two extra pieces on the cheap is exactly the kind that, that's the kind of guy that, don't laugh me out of the room, but could net a third or fourth round pick in return.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, with the way he's been playing, okay? And especially for teams, say, take like a Florida, for instance. Let's say they miss out on the Jacob Chychrun sweepstakes. Because they're, I just use them as an example because they're the team that's linked a lot. You know, somebody who wanted, say, a Ben Chiarot misses out on them. There's always going to be that one extra that didn't get quite what they want with the top shelf, but they're going to say, okay, well, we'll take what's available. And this guy, even though he's had kind of a rough time in LA, has been playing pretty well as of late. And you can't forget about the experience. So there's always that. Unfortunately for the Kings, unless they decide to stand pat, they don't have a lot of room to retain salary. But, I mean, it's, at this point, it's kind of negligible anyway.
Yeah,
but
almost at the end.
You know, so there's that to, you know, to consider as well. All right, guys, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. We're going to get a word in from our sponsors here at DraftKings. And then when we come back, we got some standings talk to talk about. All right, here's our message from our friends at DraftKings. Hoops fans, the latest offer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is too good to pass up. I'm talking between the legs, 360 windmill good. New customers can bet just $1 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still take your shot at a big payday. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Basketball Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet just $1 on any NBA team and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21 plus minimum age and location requirements vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full list of requirements and state-specific responsibility gaming resources. Void where prohibited. Minimum $5 deposit. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccppq.org/chat. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY, that's 467-369. And we're back. Took our little break here. Now we're recharged. We're ready to go, guys. All right, let's take a look at those standings. The Pacific Division standings here, where the Kings are still in second place despite the games against Boston and Dallas. Where do we think we're going to be ending up, I guess, is the question, because – second place, yeah. I mean, Calgary's running away with that division. I mean, mm-hmm. I thought maybe that Calgary train would slow down. It's not showing any signs. They obviously, we've talked about this before. They've completely bought into Daryl Sutter's system, and it's looking pretty good for them. Vegas is right behind the Kings. They're in third place. They have 64 points. With it looks like a game in hand. I don't have my glasses on, so forgive me for that one. Yeah, you laugh. You wait till you get to be this age. Vegas is actually starting to play pretty well as of late. Kind of seem to be starting to get their feet back under them. What do we think, guys? Did the Kings have to finish in the top three to be in the playoffs?
I don't think so. I think Vegas will eventually get their legs underneath them. Jack Eichel's just getting acclimated to his teammates. He's been in their first couple games. And they were kind of slowed a little bit. I think they went 1-4-1 and they just won their last one. But yeah, I guess the real battle just in the Pacific is going to be maybe with the Kings and Edmonton for the third spot. But for my prediction, I've said all along, I think the Kings finish at the second wild card spot. And unfortunately last night was a big game for that, because I think that Dallas is the team that they'll be fighting for in that last spot. You look at a team like Anaheim, they're up and down. I don't think they're really going to make a big push. And then teams like Winnipeg and Vancouver are still pretty far behind. So, yeah, it's going to be between the Kings and Dallas. And if the Kings can beat them, I think they'll be pretty good for a playoffs. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, last night was kind of a four-point game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Kings win, and they're up. They got 67 points. And they keep Dallas at 61. Now they're separated by just 2 points. Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the other teams, Vegas is, they're going to eventually get it going. Look at Nashville, who's occupying the first wild card spot, 3-6-1 over their last 10. Dallas, 7-2-1. Obviously had the win last night over us. Edmonton, 7-3-0. And there's still Anaheim there, who's 4-5-1 over their last 10. They just had a big win over Boston. Was that Tuesday?
Yeah.
But, I mean,
that was the worst, too, after what Boston did to us.
Yeah. Well, they almost blew it. They almost blew it. But, I mean, I don't really have a solid answer. All I can say is it's going to be a dogfight, guys. It is going to be a dogfight down the stretch. Got 27 games remaining. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say Friday is a must win, but they certainly have to get back on the right path here soon.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, unlike the Eastern Conference, which the eight spots were decided pretty much by New Year's Day, there's still some drama left in the West. You know, this is really going to come down to, and it's not because they're the Kings' biggest rival. I just don't think Anaheim's got enough to get themselves into the playoffs. I see that magic carpet ride coming to an end, right?
Yeah.
And the same thing for Vancouver. Winnipeg is a team that kind of makes me a little bit nervous, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. because they had a horrible start, really. But there's still so much talent on that team that if they go on a Columbus-like win streak from a couple of years ago, remember when they won like 10 in a row?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden. So Winnipeg's a team I definitely keep an eye on.
They're getting Ehlers back soon, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like they needed another weapon. Right.
Yeah.
Edmonton is just one of those, unless they do something about that goaltending situation. I'm telling you, I don't. I mean, there's enough talent there, obviously, to get themselves into the third spot. But that's not a team that's built for the playoffs. Let's put it that way.
I'd be really curious if they go after Marc-Andre Fleury at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
You just said it, Scott. I mean, their goaltending is holding them back is just crazy, because they have arguably the two best players in the league on that roster.
You know who I heard they're linked to? Semyon Varlamov.
Ooh.
Yeah.
They need something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, 39-year-old Mike Smith was not it.
So I think it'll be interesting, because I know the Kings have, I think it's 9 games until the trade deadline. So these next few games are going to be huge to see what the Kings do on March 21st.
Right. And I'll tell you something right now, guys. Now is not the time for a losing streak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you're going to seriously stay in the playoff race, in a spot where the Kings are, or even like the Predators or the Stars or the Oilers or any of the teams we just talked about, you have to be playing, even when you're playing bad hockey, you have to play at least 500 hockey. Because if you go and drop 5 games in a row, that is a hole you just dug that you're probably not going to get out of, because you run out of track, right? Mm-hmm. Games are all of a sudden scarce. Whereas if you do it in November, it's like, we got 60 games left. We can make this up. You do that in March. Also, well, wait a minute. We got 12 games left.
Guys. Well, yeah. I mean, you look at the Kings start to the season 1-5-1, and then they played ridiculous hockey since. Exactly. And now they're kind of facing that same adversity again. So, for me, I don't know if Todd McClellan is back, but I'm sure Trent Yonne is still instilling the same message. But they seem to need one of those practices where they just hammer on the details, you know, after the the Vegas loss after the Edmonton loss, and then they come right back and they're well on their way again.
Right. And don't forget, the Kings are still a very young team.
You know,
they really are. I know I say young. Well, we're led by Kopitar, Doughty, and Brown, who, you know, combine them, and it's almost 100 years. But other than that, they're young, right? So let's say the Kings do flounder. Let's just throw it out there. I hate to talk about it, but let's say it does happen. How does that change for the modality at the trade deadline? Are they still buyers to try to get that last spot? Do they stand pat and say, you know what, forget it, we're just going to keep what we got? Or do they sell a few pieces?
I don't think it matters, to be honest with you, what they do with these next few 9 games. I think that it's going to be – I mean, we've talked about Athanasiu. I think he's trade bait no matter what. If you're thinking about playing Carl Grundstrom and possibly Jared Anderson Dolan over him at this point, it just makes sense to try to move him. Let's say the team does go on like a losing streak, I don't think they're really ever going to go after like a big rental or try to like sell off big name pieces like a Jonathan Quick or anybody else besides Mata and Athanasiu, who we expect to possibly get moved. Or maybe even a Dustin Brown. I don't think he's getting moved. Or let's say like the opposite end of the spectrum. Let's say they go on a win streak. I don't think they were going to be in the market for any type of big rentals. I know I've mentioned maybe Ben Chiarot, but it sounds like he might require a first-round pick to get, which is just ridiculous. So, yeah, Rob Blake has mentioned the need for a scorer. We've talked about Jacob Chychrun on end. So can that trade be done? Yeah, I could still see that trade being done at the deadline because he's got term left on his deal, so that would make sense. But as far as any, like, big rental pieces, I don't see anything happening as far as big pieces being moved incoming or being moved out from the Kings roster.
Yeah, you know what makes me nervous about the Chychrun situation? If the Kings do start floundering, and I said this before, Florida's the team that's been attached to him the most along with the Kings. So Florida will have an urgency to try to get him because they're looking at – obviously they're looking at a pretty deep Stanley Cup run here at this point. Mm-hmm. And if the Kings flounder, they won't be. But that might also force Florida's hand to up the ante. So – at that point, if you're the Kings, do you stay in the poker game, so to speak, put more chips in to try to get them? Or do you just say, hey, Florida, you know what? You're way overpaying right now, even for Jacob Chychrun, because you want to win a cup. We can't afford to lose, you know, say even 3 or 4 prospects at this point and walk away. That's, you know, there's a whole dynamic at play here because – as far as Chychrun goes, I think that's who it's going to come down to. I know Anaheim's been linked to Chychrun as well. I just, for some reason, I don't see that working, to be honest with you. And I know Anaheim's got the prospects to do it, and I know Anaheim's got the picks to do it. But for just something, my spidey sense, whatever, is telling me that that's not going to happen. I think it's going to be Florida. It's going to be the team you got to worry about here. And if Florida seriously does throw in like an Anton Lundell and a Spencer Knight, that's going to be hard to compete with.
Yeah, it just makes sense for the Kings. I mean, yeah, we've talked about it end on end. It's Jacob Chychrun to the Kings just makes all the sense in the world. When I saw the Coyotes assistant general manager, John Ferguson, at the game the other day, that was kind of like an eye-opening. Like, okay, he's here for a reason. He's not just here to scout like a Kings team that they might be playing against here. And They're sent him here for a reason, and that kind of like put everybody on alert. Like, oh, is that trade going down? And I just think if it doesn't go down by the trade deadline, I think it goes down by draft . So I don't see Florida giving up Lundell. Honestly, I think Florida's pretty well off right now. I picked them to go to the finals and play Colorado because they just look like solid all the way throughout. I mean, Lundell. Yeah. I think Lundell's going to end up winning the Calder. All this talk about Raymond or Sider and Zegras, Lundell's kind of come out of nowhere and been look just almost playing just as good as Sasha Barkov for them. And it's been a crazy 1-2 punch down the middle for them. So if the Kings are going to make the Chychrun trade at the deadline, would be good. But I can see it. I think it'd be even more beneficial for them to make it at the draft table because if you do have Alex Edler coming back at the end of March, just throw Edler in there. you have Mata as a seventh defenseman, see what the team can do at the end of the season, and then ride that wave until the draft table, and then make some big moves.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't Lundell an early number one overall candidate in his draft year?
I believe some people were pumping his tires.
I think so.
Yeah, and then he just kind of fell for whatever reason. And you sure know why that they were talking like that, huh? Ryan, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you guys touched on it, but let's keep it short and sweet. I think if the Kings make any move, it's going to be someone with term that they can have around for the next few seasons as they continue to develop and, I guess, keep traveling towards being a perennial playoff contender and eventually a Stanley Cup contender again.
Yeah, you're right. Rental makes zero sense at all at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to score, I mean, I've always said my preferred option would be to acquire Chychrun at the deadline because you'll have to give up assets to get him. And you can make a hard run at Philip Forsberg in the offseason if he is still unsigned. You know, you got Brown, Mata, Athanasiou, and who else comes off?
You got a couple RFAs, Lemieux, Lizotte, Anderson.
Yeah, I think Elias Anderson could be a non-tender candidate.
I was going to say, you got to re-sign Brendan Lemieux now. He's the dark horse candidate for team MVP.
Yeah, I'm missing one other UFA. I can't think of it. But the point is there's some money coming off the books where you could financially get a Forsberg deal done.
It's funny that you talked about that because I was actually on Cap Friendly like all night last night trying to just kind of maneuver just to see what could happen next season as far as the Kings. And so in this like fictitious world I had where I was the Kings GM, I signed Adrian Kempe to a 6-year deal for $5 million. And I signed Philip Forsberg to a 4-year deal for $8.5 million. And the Kings had like $200,000 in cap space. And that was without re-signing Dustin Brown, Olli Maatta, Alex Edler, and bringing
Edler.
Back,
Edler was the guy for that.
And bringing back Mikey Anderson at like a $2 million deal, Lemieux at like a $1.5 million, and Lizotte at like a $1 million deal. The biggest problem with the Kings next year's salary cap is Jonathan Quick. Because if you're going to have two goalies locked in for $11 million,
that hurts.
Yeah, it is going to hurt to try to bring in a sniper like a Philip Forsberg, especially if you're only going to be playing, if you're kind of going to be splitting them. I mean, and with how we're seeing Jonathan Quick play these last couple of games, man, it's going to be hard to be paying him $5.8 million next year, especially if Cal Peterson needs to make that jump to be the starter. Who knows what the Kings do with Quickie's contract?
While we're on the topic, you know, do you guys give Cal Peterson more starts heading down the stretch?
Absolutely,
100%, 100%. And I've had a lot of people come because I mentioned the other day that I think it's Cal's net right now, and I didn't say that thinking that like Cal's playing better than Quick, but it's just he's got to start showing that he needs to earn that contract that he's getting. Quick or Peterson isn't really taking the reins in these last couple of games. They've kind of both been up and down. So if you're going to have a starter, if you're going to have Cal Peterson be the eventual future of this team, he needs to have more starts toward the end of the season and show that he's the future of this team in net.
Well, now let me pose the same or a different question for you, because we talked about it on the last one. If you give Cal more starts down the stretch, who's your game one starter in the playoffs?
It depends on how Cal's playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is.
If he's showing that he can handle the load, Cal Peterson is your future. And, you know, I hate to say it, but if the Kings do make the playoffs, it's not like anybody's going to be expecting anything out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So for Cal Peterson to be able to get playoff experience is invaluable. I mean, Jonathan Quick has more than enough. And he's done a heck of a job with it.
Just a couple games.
You know? And I will say this, too. You know, the job of being a backup goaltender in the NHL or any kind of level of professional hockey is probably one of the hardest jobs in the world. We talked about this before. Goalies need to play to get into a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, it's horribly hard to even think about saying goodbye to Quickie. And you're right, Russ. That $5.8 million next year is basically an albatross. Here's the problem. What do you do as far as getting your second goaltender? Because even if you get into like a buyout mode, or if you manage to trade quick, which I don't want to think about, but let's say you do, you're going to have to retain half of that contract to move him. Okay? So now you still got to pay somebody else to come in and fill that second goalie spot, because I just don't see anybody in Ontario stepping up to take the role. As much as I like Matt Vallada, you know, it's I don't see it. Mm-hmm. And especially if they're going to be legit playoff contenders next year. You can't have an unsettled goaltending situation. You can't. So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of pressure on Cal Peterson, no doubt about it. But they're paying him number one goalie money now. So he's got to be the man, but you still have to have a 1B, regardless. Because he's not going to be an Andrei Vasilevskiy and start, you know, 70 games or something like that. It's simply not going to happen. That goaltender is rare. So, you can move the money, Quick's money off the books, but you're bringing some of it, if not 75% of it, back.
Yeah, it would kind of be like what they did with Jeff Carter. They had to trade and had to eat up some of that salary. But, yeah, and that's kind of why it's hard, because, I mean, it's the same thing we've talked about with Dustin Brown. I mean, all the things that these players have done for the franchise, bringing in two cups and all the accolades and whatnot, what do you do to the end of the twilight of their careers to kind of, like, you don't want to just kick them out the door. You just kind of – I wouldn't expect Rob Blake to – I mean, any move that would happen, I would expect Rob Blake to obviously talk with the player to make sure that it's in the best interest of them and put their interests first. But as far as the game one starter, yeah, I think you have to look to see if Cal Peterson is playing, I guess, up to par or just average or above average to the end of the season. Because right now, I mean, besides the last game against Dallas, he's 9-3 in his last 12. So he's winning games. Right. We've seen teams use two goaltenders in the playoffs and even in one series. That's not out of the realm of possibility. So who knows? Maybe you have Cal play a game or two in the playoffs, doesn't really play well. Give Jonathan Quick a couple games toward the end of the series and see what happens. But yeah, if Cal's really going to be the future in net for LA, he needs to start taking the reins more, and they need to give him more consistent starts to show him, give him the platform to show that he is capable of doing that.
So what are you saying? We're looking at a 2018 Washington Capitals situation.
Yeah, what was it?
Holpe Drew Bauer started off, he was going to get destroyed, and then they brought Holpe back, who had been playing terrible all year. He comes back and wins the cup.
Mm-hmm. Well, just while you're on the topic, a quick note for our listeners. Jeff Carter will be playing in his 50th game for the Penguins tonight. Mm-hmm. Why is that important? Because the 2023 fourth-round pick that they got for him will be elevated to a third-round pick.
Woohoo!
Yeah, more draft capital for trades.
More draft capital.
I like it. Exactly. That's always important going forward. Okay, well, you know what? There it is. Looking ahead at the schedule, we just talked about the Columbus Blue Jackets. Friday night at the, I think it's the Nationwide Arena that they play at. What do you guys think? We actually have to at least get a point out of this game.
Yeah, you got to. Patrick Laine is playing unreal right now. Mm-hmm. You got to come away with at least a point on Friday.
Yeah, we'll see if Zach Werenski's back. He's been injured for the past four games.
Okay.
Difference defenseman making for the Columbus Blue Jackets. So definitely got to get a point out of that. And then Sunday, they go on to Buffalo, which is a game I'll be back, guys. So
yes, you and Joe will both be there.
For our listeners that don't know, both of our shows, Hockey Royalty and Making It Rain, are cross-country shows because myself and Joe live in upstate New York, and we're going to be converging on the KeyBank Center. I just hope it's a better result because I get so frustrating, right? Because as bad as Buffalo has been over the past few years, that place is just like the Bermuda Triangle for the Kings.
They just beat
such a hard time winning there.
They just beat the Maple Leafs, right?
Yeah, 4-1, convincingly too.
4-2, yeah, something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's like a hockey day for Hockey Royalty on Sundays. I'll be at the Blackhawks Lightning game Sunday night.
Love it.
We've got the entire continent covered. We're great.
And then in April, I'll be back there for the Kings Blackhawks game. So
nice. Nice.
It'd be nice to take in a casual event where I really don't have a vested interest on Sunday.
You mean where you don't have to take blood pressure medication?
Yeah. You mean beer? Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, man. That's awesome. All right, guys. Looks like we're kind of coming to the end of our time here. Any closing thoughts?
No, it's a tough couple of games, or a big couple of games for the Kings in Columbus, and then with the back-to-back from Buffalo and straight into Boston. Yeah, hopefully the Kings can at least take, 4 points out of these next three games. So we'll see.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, that's enough for us. If you got a minute, check out HockeyRoyalty.com. We're putting up new articles about the Kings and the Rain on there daily. Fun, interesting reads, if I don't say so myself. But anyways, as always, we thank you for listening. We appreciate all your support. For Russell Morgan, for Ryan Sykes, I'm Scott Kinville. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Hockey Royalty Podcast.